You are listening to Up to Me Radio, the best in inspirational talk radio. It's up to me.
Gail Radio Show, and I'm your host, actress, author, producer, and content creator, and you all know what I love to do. I love serving Mauravation because it's the perfect blend of motivation and inspiration, and tonight's conversation, I have the honor of joining forces with my husband, and you all know I get really giddy when I have an opportunity for him to join the show, so would you be so kind to put your hands together in a virtual hand clap for Pastor Gerald January Sr. And the crowd goes crazy.
That's a little effect, huh? Okay.
Yes, say hello to the people.
How's everybody doing? God bless you.
Well, we're really excited about tonight's show for multiple reasons. One, we have been witnessing history.
Yeah.
You know, we've been witnessing... Matter of fact, you were watching the documentary, and we'll talk a little bit about that, because he was sharing with me this documentary he was watching. It could be today. It could be modern day, like right now, but it was from 1992, I believe, right? And so we're going to unpack that, but what we want to just let you know so that we can set the intention of the show, we're going to talk about the intersection, this three-way intersection between the problem, the protest, and the peace. And, you know, my husband and I, we dialogue about quite a bit. We talk.
Yeah, that's another word for talk a lot.
We do. We like unpacking stuff and dialoguing and kind of understanding each other's perspective, as well as, you know, what our thoughts are about movies, TV shows, songs, different things. And so we're going to start real quick just unpacking the problem. And so I'll let you go ahead. And, you know, my husband, those who are members of Verna Park know that my husband loves definitions. And those who join us on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. at Vernon Park, which is VPCOG Linwood on Facebook, those that join us at 10 o'clock on Sunday mornings, you are aware that my husband uses words, and he likes to define the word so that not only you see the definition, but you really comprehend the meaning of a word. So I'm going to ask you, can you share with the people?
The people.
What problem?
Well, first of all three of the topics that you picked, are, if these were intersections, they'd all be five-lane highways. I mean, these are huge. And in the 54 minutes you have left, I hope we can just put a pothole in some of this somewhere. The first thing is a problem. Problem is a situation or a matter that's unwelcome or something that's harmful. It needs to be dealt with. Problems. And obviously, we have a lot of problems right now between the COVID-19 and everything that's brought to our nation and the world. Up until 2 weeks ago, that was the biggest problem we've had in 100 years.
Yeah.
Now we have a two-headed monster. And the one we're dealing with right now has to do with racism and race relations in America. Let me just say this about this problem. This is so huge. There's a saying I say sometimes that there are no short-term solutions for long-term problems.
Right.
And so shallow answers don't work with deep problems. It doesn't work at all. So all we're going to do is address them. When you have issues like this, everybody, it touches so deeply. Everybody wants to say something. So this is your chance to deal with something that we're dealing with in a huge way. The problem with this problem is that it's systematic. It's systematic. That means it's a fixed plan and it's methodical. It's part of a system. And this is a very emotional issue, Mara, but systems are not subject to emotion.
Say that one more time. Let me type that. Systems are not subject to emotion.
Yes, systems are not intimidated by emotions. They're not. They don't change because you get emotional. You may react emotionally to them, especially when you get to a tipping point, which we did in the last few days. But emotion alone doesn't work. It doesn't work. And so there's a lot of emotion going on right now. There's a lot of headlines. It's really out there. But old systems must be replaced by new systems. The only thing you can replace old systems is emotion is only temporary. Systems, they work like apartheid was a system. And through the 1800s, the 1900s, it kept on going. So that's part of the issue.
Awesome. Did you share what problem, the definition of problem?
Yes, problem is a matter or a situation regarded as unwelcome or harmful and needing to be dealt with or overcome. That's
okay.
What the problem is.
That is a lot just in itself.
Mm-hmm.
Matter or situation regarded as unwelcome. Something you didn't ask for,
right.
Something you don't want.
Right.
So I don't even wish problems on my enemies. I don't even wish any enemies.
Yes, because you're really nice.
I really don't. And then it says it's harmful or needing to be dealt with and overcome, which means problems don't go away.
They don't go away.
By themselves.
No, they don't.
Problems take effort and energy.
Yeah, the civil rights, one of the anthems of the civil rights is that well-known song, We Shall Overcome.
Mm-hmm.
But it says someday, because even racism, the way it's set up in the United States, it was called Jim Crow at one time. Jim Crow is not a personality. Jim Crow is a system. It's systematic. And therefore, at the same system I dealt with at 16 years old, I deal with today at 63 because even though we've been emotional about it, we've dealt with it, but not really the way it should have been. So we're going to get into that as well. I'd like to say something even in relation to COVID-19.
Sure.
The crisis, COVID-19, and how it's overextended itself in the black communities, that's predictable. It was predictable because of some systematic things. I just got through reading a great book by Dr. David Ansel, and it's called County. And it talks about his 30 years plus as a physician at Cook County Hospital. But can I read a couple things from the book?
Yeah.
He talks about the systematic reason why there's so much bad health amongst blacks in Chicago. He said by 2010, over 3,000 black people died every year in Chicago because they did not have the same health care experiences as white people. He goes on to say poor health was not just the result of random acts. Now, understand, this book was written in 2012. Listen to what he said. Deliberate public policy decisions about housing, education, parks, and streets were the key drivers of racial differences in mortality. And then he finally said, when any health disaster struck Chicago, he was talking about diabetes or AIDS or whatever, he wrote this in 2012, he said, these communities, these black communities, suffered a disproportionate amount morbidity and mortality. That was 8 years ago. So when COVID virus came to Cook County, it hit harder in black communities on the south and west side because there's a system set up where African Americans are not privy to the same health care and life, issues that other communities are. So that's a huge problem. If this thing comes back because of all of the gathering together in a month from now, it's going to hit harder in our community once again, and that is predictable. Just like what's happening right now and what eventually happened with those that have died in the last few months, including George Floyd.
Yeah, the word talks about there's nothing new under the sun, you know, and so everything is just reinvented or done a little different. It's a different name, a different face,
right.
and a different, you know, cop in some cases, different dis-ease in some cases, but all of it is just the it's like right now we're having a spotlight on what my husband would say is a simultaneous reality. It's something that's taking place at the exact same time. And one reality, you can't believe that you're witnessing so many ethnicities on the streets, non-color, not people of that aren't African-American, on the streets. In some cities, more numerous than the African-Americans. That's one thing. And then you have this simultaneous reality of COVID-19, which we're not really going to unpack that tonight because that in itself is a whole nother subject. It hasn't went away, though it's not in your face like it had been, which is really interesting. We've been talking about that, how you could have a ticker tape running every day of how many people's lives were lost and how many COVID cases we have, and then all of a sudden this racial tension happens. And it's as if it disappeared, although we know it's a problem. It hasn't went away. Yeah. It's just taken a back burner. And someone, one of my dear friends, I believe it was Erin, she said somebody was saying something to her. It's like you're having this problem, which is COVID, and there's a fire right behind you. You have to attend to the fire. And this racial tension is now the fire. So let's talk a little bit about the problem. The problem. Mm-hmm. Racism, the problem, not having clear and precise intentions or plans for what we want the outcome to be, the problem, not taking the time to go beyond elections for our president, but participation in the elections for our senators and our House of Representatives members. We need to go beyond the conversation of just making sure that we have a president that we want in office, because the president doesn't make the laws and the president can't do anything without those two branches of government working with him, right?
Well, the thing that is so interesting about what's happening in 2020, because this problem is not new, it is as old as our nation is, is that because of technology, like the technology we're using right now, more people are actually seeing it. And it's hard to change the narrative when it's right there in your face.
Yeah.
I don't know many black men my age. Actually, I don't know any black men my age that doesn't have a cop story.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not anti-cop. My son is a police officer. And there are many police officers that attend our church. I'm just saying the system allows for certain things to happen to blacks. It started happening to me when I was, before I got to junior high school, I was attacked by a cop. So we understand what it is. But the reality is that when I played football in college, which was a school that was 93% Anglo, most of my classmates didn't even believe the things I would tell them that happened in Detroit, because it never happened to them.
Yeah.
Never happened to them. So what's happening now is there's an ability to see it. That problem is not going to disappear just because of the marches. This is a response. The response is simultaneous. It's good. I don't know any other way to say this. Right now, it's popular, or we're on TV, and we're black, and we don't have to sing or play basketball. There's no sport. There's no
tap dance. No,
we don't have to do anything but be African American.
That's it.
And because there are no,
we only have one job right now.
Be black.
Ooh.
And be real.
Yes,
now,
authenticity.
Everybody's not going to be that. Some people will use this as a microphone opportunity and that type of thing. But the truth of the matter is, if enough people address the problem, then we can start dealing with our second topic later on, which is protest.
Yes.
What that really is, why it happens, because there's this line that goes in. And the first thing is the problem. That's the first. And so it's real. It's always real. My new book I'm writing right now, called The Joshua Process, it talks about a lot of that. But back 25 years ago, I wrote a book called A Second Time. And it was about racism in not only in America, but the Church of America.
Yes.
And the Bible says in Jonah 4:1, and God spoke to Jonah a second time. The reason he had to is because Jonah was racist. And he did not want these people that he couldn't stand to ever find the grace of God. So again, here we go. It's just simultaneous reality. This is a perfect storm. There is nothing else in the news except for reality. This is real reality TV.
Right.
So how do we respond to it?
Yeah. And some people are responding in anger.
Mm-hmm.
And most African Americans are frustrated,
yeah.
tired of being tired,
yeah.
Hoping that this will be this time will be the time that makes the difference. You know, so we're hopeful. We're also irritated that we're still seeing it, experiencing it. But you know, modern technology, and this is what's so interesting. You know, there's some things about modern technology I dislike. But there's this right here, these modern-day lynchings being captured, murders taking place before our eyes. And you guys remember back when Rodney King was assaulted in the street,
right.
they basically said, who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes?
Right.
In other words, they just duped us. And half of that I've discovered is because the police unions have certain rules that basically protect the cops.
Yeah.
And until those kinds of systems are overturned, rewritten, revised, and or stricken from their playbook, this will continue to happen because there is a clause in there for them to protect the officers. And please, as he just shared, my son-in-law is a cop. So this is not about cop bashing. This is about those cops who literally intend to do people of color harm. And that color is not just African Americans, that's our brown brothers as well. And that's unfortunate.
Yeah, Mara, here's what we need to understand. Systems use whatever is available to move it forward. They don't care if it's a church, cops, politicians, because basically in a society like ours, if you really want to know the culprit is, just follow the money.
Right.
Because money solves all things. But if you want to really know what's happening in America and why things are the way they are, follow the money.
Yes.
Follow it. It'll lead you right to the hand inside the puppet.
Yep. Because there's always somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's mm-hmm. manipulating the puppet. And we have to pay attention, you know, so we're going to go ahead and segue into the protest in a moment. But part of this problem is us not defining what we want.
That's the last one, plan.
Yeah. We cannot, and this is one of the biggest problems we have. We have this problem with keeping our money in our community. We have this problem with ensuring we support black businesses. One black mechanic mess up your car one time, and you will never go back to him again. You will swear him off. And please keep in mind, because I've got all kinds of friends and all colors. This is not I'm anti anybody.
Right.
I'm just saying, as a black woman, when a mechanic makes a mistake on my car, I'm not dinging the entire race behind one mechanic. Because when a Caucasian mechanic makes a mistake on my car, I may choose not to go to that shop again, but I'm not swearing off all white mechanics. And I've heard it said, I'm sure you have. I've had people, girl, this black guy, he messed up my car. I'm never use a black guy again. And I'm like, the whole race?
That's part of the system.
Yeah, because we've been programmed.
The system is a good teacher. And it teaches over time. The reality is that, again, is part of how the system works. When you give your own people a much shorter leash, you give everybody else. I don't know how else to say this, but one of the things that must be really interesting to black dollars these last 3 months, they stayed in this community.
Yeah.
Because we couldn't get out and spend. And understand if we could actually intentionally, as a people, and this is not being racist or anything else, because all cultures usually spend and pay and support themselves.
Right.
If we could actually keep black dollars, at least a good portion of it, in support of the work that blacks do in their community, then we don't have to worry about people coming in developing our money, our communities,
yeah.
and that type of thing as well. Yeah. yeah.
And you all know, I'll get my eyebrows done, I'll go get me a weave, a wig, a clip on, or whatever, because I like the versatility. But you won't see in an Asian community, a black-owned nail shop. You won't see a soul food restaurant in a Korean neighborhoods. You won't, there are certain things you just won't see. They won't even allow us to do that. But in our communities, we have all of those things. So that is also a part of the problem. Because if we're not supporting our own businesses or we're writing them off for one mistake, and then we are supporting everybody else, we're helping them build up their culture, their family. They're sending their money back to Mexico or back to China or back to Korea or whatever it is that they send their money. But we're not doing that. And we wonder why we don't own anything. You know, and again, system. You know, you did a message once, sweetheart, and I was telling somebody about it the other night. We were in church, and you were sharing a message about the disadvantage, and you pulled Pastor Frank and Pastor Quincy up to demonstrate it. And he said, okay, I'm going to have you two guys, and this is just, I want to explain this because these are the disadvantages. And for my my friends that are not African-American, I want you to understand how the systems are set up. So he put the two pastors side by side, and he said, when you leave this area, I want you to run over into that room, and there's going to be, was it money?
Yes,
it was a prize, money. It was something substantive. Mm-hmm. And so he stood them side by side. Then he said, oh, you know what? I'm going to move you back. He took one of the pastors, Pastor Frank, and he moved him back, what? I don't know.
About 20 feet.
20 feet. And he said, okay, now this is what I'm going to do. And the example was the systems are set up so that even when you're as qualified, even when you have the same education, even when you've got the same skill set, when you go up for the job or you go up for the position or you're seen on the street, there's always a disadvantage. So this one pastor was standing, 20 feet?
20 feet back.
20 feet in front of the other pastor. Then he said, okay, on your mark, get set, hold it. He said, you know what? That's still a little too fair. So then you put a blindfold.
No, I made him turn around.
Oh, no, I thought you spin them at the last. I thought you put the blindfold in there.
Yes, I did.
See, I know the story I'm telling. No, because, see, I was listening to it, and he was teaching it. But it was seared in my mind. He put a blindfold on the young man, and he said, okay, now you're ready. On your mark, get set. Then he said, wait. Then he turned him around. He spun him around so he could be dizzy and didn't know where his bearings were. And then he said, now go. Of course, the person that was 20 feet ahead, who didn't have on a blindfold and wasn't discombobulated because he hadn't been spun around, he knew exactly how to run into the next room, grab what he needed, and come back. Why are we sharing that? That's a part of the problem, which is why when we grow up, our parents tell us, you have to be twice as smart. You have to work twice as hard. Remember, this is just regular conversation, as regular as it is to tell your African American son or daughter how not to address or how to address the police officers when they pull you over. Everybody knows 10 and 2 are hands on the dashboard. Everybody knows don't do anything sudden. Don't do it quick. Don't jerk. Don't look like you're reaching for anything. You wait till they come to the car and they ask you for your license and even then say, hey, my license is in my glove compartment. May I go over there? And even with the word sir, as I shared last week with George Floyd saying, sir, I can't breathe, which when he was saying that, that's respect, kind of like, you know, look, I'm in a vulnerable position, sir, to desperation, because prayerfully, my sir might be the plea that that you need to hear in order to get up off my neck. Sir represented for me the acronym I chose to call it was SAD, incomprehensible reality. That in his last few breaths, he had to say sir to the person to try to get him to get off of him. And of course, we know how that all played out. But there's an emotional searing that took place just witnessing that, us as a people and the conscience of America. But all of those things are true. Let's go ahead and segue.
Right.
Unless you have something.
No, I was going to say, I noticed that you didn't put not in there. Systems are not subject to emotions. Yes.
Oh, I got it. Okay.
Make sure
I'll
put that in.
Thank you, my love.
Yeah. And please understand what we're saying, that we want this whole hour to be
productive.
Problem number one, protest is number two. What's a protest? A protest is how you express disapproval of or objection to something. How you express your disapproval or objection to something. What's happening this week? It's not new. in my lifetime, I've seen this over and over again for almost the exact same reason. 1965, Watts, Los Angeles.
Yes.
Young man is killed. Two young men pulled off off the expressway by a cop. One's beaten, killed. Riot starts. 7 days, people killed, things burned. 1967, in my hometown, I was almost 11 years old. I never forget it. Young man killed behind a nightclub. And by that weekend, part of the West Side started burning, and it burned for 7 days for the exact same reason. The year later, Dr. King was killed. It happened around the country. 1992 in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Y'all know it's Rodney King. Mm-hmm. Same thing happened. Same thing happened as happening today. There's always usually a black male who has been killed, murdered, beaten by a policeman, and it's a tipping point. And it's not like it's the first one that's happened. It just happens to be a tipping point. All of them during the summertime, all were due to injustice against African-American males. I've lived through them all. Now, if you don't understand, you have friends that don't understand, I don't usually promote other people's stuff, but let me say this. On Netflix, there is a documentary called L.A. 92. L.A. 92. It is a story of what happened in Los Angeles. You got to watch it. You got an hour and 55 minutes. If you have any doubt that what I'm saying is systematic, just turn it on and you sit there and go, oh, my God, it's the exact same thing. There's so many things that are familiar or similar in that story to what's happening right now.
Including?
yesterday, there were a total of four policemen that were indicted mm-hmm. for what happened to that young man. In 92, four policemen indicted for what happened to that young man. The Attorney General, Bill Barr, this week, had people come in and gas these folks, and he brought to the president's office. Do you know who the Attorney General of the United States was in 1992? Bill Barr, the same guy was Attorney General then, that's Attorney General now. The president was a Republican, like it is right now. It was an election year. Yeah, it's like this is
like
an election year. That's how Bill Clinton became president, because Bush, number one, did not know how to handle this. He said some things. When you watch the video, just watch it. And if you have friends that don't understand what's going on, just tell them, hey, look, you have to come to my house, turn on Netflix, L.A. 92 is on right now, and the dialogue, the looting, the crying, almost everything is exactly. Matter of fact, some of the politicians you will see on the screen are the same ones you saw on the screen today. They were just 28 years younger than they are right now. The exact same thing happened. America responded the exact same way because what tends to happen after a problem becomes too heavy for a group or society, the next thing that happens is some form of overt protest. And so this is not new. I don't know why folks get all upset and say, oh, they broke windows. Watch the video. I lived through it in 67 in Detroit. There is nothing different. It is how folks respond to this type of situation.
And the only difference of 92 was in the streets, there weren't as many non-black people.
Exactly.
That was really about the only difference, you know, and it wasn't caught on a cell phone,
right.
You know, but
it was caught on film.
It was caught on film. So this is the reality. You just drove by a street that I definitely want to peek in at, okay. Which is you talked about Detroit and you talked about L.A. When we do these protests, and granted, for the most part, they're peaceful protests.
Mm-hmm.
They are organized by people who want change, who want to bring attention to a subject, a situation, and the reality in which we live in.
Right.
But there's always some people
right.
that have another agenda.
Right.
And that's at work, that's in your church,
right.
that's in your neighborhood, that's even in your family.
Right.
There's always somebody that has an alternate agenda. And so how much so would that be true when you're looking at not 50 people, not 100 people, but thousands of people gathering in multiple different cities, which means that the opportunity is ripe for it, and it's 99.9% more than likely that bad apples are going to show up to the protest, because there are people who love these kinds of things to happen so that they can have a reason or an excuse to steal, loot, and break in. And that's all colors. That's not just white influencing blacks to do it or blacks influencing whites. That is a lot of people, especially in a climate where we've got COVID-19 and a huge unemployment rate. It's the perfect storm, so to speak. People are low on finances. They've been cooped up in the house. The weather got warm, and the police can't be everywhere, and they know they outnumber them. So then their mind and or mentality, or lack thereof, chooses to destroy something. But there are people that are driving. We were just reading about the Boogaloo.
Yes.
Who drove, 18 hours, I believe it was, 18 hours to go to Las Vegas, I think it was.
Minnesota.
But they also caught three people who drove over to
Las Vegas.
Yeah,
to start
Civil War.
Yeah. And that's a phrase that's been coming up a lot. I know at Vernon Park I've talked about it for the last 3 to 5 years, explained to you why some people really want that to happen. But even when you watch the video, I hate to keep harping on it,
but what
you will see is all of these peaceful marchers and protesters and how frustrated they get when this other group comes in and starts just tearing up things,
yep.
Especially the third or fourth day.
Yep.
It is part, again, the system is also set up that unless you have a certain type of plan in place, your emotion, even your response, will actually double back on you. It's like having a blocked digestive system. No matter what you do, if there's a blockage there, once your food, whatever, reaches that blockage,
yes.
It's going to upset the stomach, upset the body.
Yes.
And so even in church, you have to understand what that is. Part of what we're doing at Vernon Park this year, Lord put it in my heart, that in December, that we've got to stay focused, especially the first 8 months to 9 months of this year.
Right.
Had no idea there was going to be a virus. I had no idea this was going to happen. But we actually dubbed this year the year of focus. And we have to understand that there's so many distractions that unless you understand what this is all about, you'll get distracted by the protest and never understand what the intended outcome could be from this. Because unless something is put into place that we'll talk about third,
yeah.
This will end just like the others. The other four I mentioned to you, the other four large riots, the one in 92 up until this year was the most expensive riot in the history of the United States. It cost over $1 billion worth of damage in one city, in Los Angeles. Now, this one may actually rival it because it's in like 25 cities. But the reality is that there has to be a plan, or the protest will be the end of the situation.
Yeah. There are some comments that I definitely want to kind of chime in on. One, I posted a book, so I've got the documentary posted so that you guys can check it out. I need to put in there that it was a Netflix documentary. There's also a book that Sister Alvina put up saying, I believe it's called Post-Traumatic Slave Syndrome by Joy Dugory. I'm not sure. And then someone made the comment, incomprehensible trauma will cause incomprehensible response. And that's the reality. When something is major and huge that you can't make it make sense and you can't unsee it, so your brain is trying to process, how could you do that? Because it's so inhumane. But let me tell you, watching something that happens that inhumane, not only does a number to cause you to be angry and frustrated, but it also sears something else way back here that I think people aren't paying attention to, which is when you treat something like it's inhuman, you begin to believe it is inhuman. It's kind of like how they duped us with television, and I talked about that a little bit last week on OMG, how when you saw blacks always killing and stealing and robbing people, then you began to clutch your purse. Black people did it against black people. All of Asian people, you know, everyone in every country, white America, people began to believe it because it was portrayed over and over again that we were gangbangers, that we were murderers, that we were robbers, that we were up to no good, that we were evil people. And just like with Trump speaking things. But also, that's why I think it was CNN that came out with the ad or MSNBC that said, this is a banana. it will always be a banana. And no matter how many times you call it an apple, it is still a banana. But he frames things and people believe it. He framed that when Kaepernick kneeled, it was about a disrespect of the flag. We all know that wasn't true, but he said it. And Drew Brees just apologized today because he was against it, saying, you know, I still don't believe in the whole, you know, flag thing. It's a disrespect to the flag. But he got checked real quick when he got the backlash. Not the time. You're on the wrong side of history. And I can name a couple of people that were on the wrong side of history when Obama got in office, Smiley and Cornell. But that's what happens when you're on the wrong side of history. You got to know when the movement is happening. You got to get on board. Not get on board just to be joyriding, but get on board to be an impact and influence to the actual reality and the outcome of the situation.
Right. So again, as Mara was saying, so much of this pain is cumulative. Being in my 60s now, I keep harping on that. It's happened so much in my life that when it doesn't happen, when there's not racism, when I'm not stopped by the cops, when I'm not followed in a storm, and I actually think that's what surprises me, you know. And there are those that think that that's all right because, you know, we got to watch those people. Or one of the greatest insults people say to me is that, well, you know, you're a different kind of black man. I remember telling one guy, so how many black people do you know? How do you know I'm different? The only reason why you know I'm different because you work with me, you have to deal with me every day, and it's been proven I know a whole lot more than you do. So, again, that whole idea of having the response, which comes out to be this sort of the riot or the protest, it's a natural response to this long-term issue, and every generation deals with it.
Yeah.
I've lived through all of these from 65 to now, but they all start the same way.
Yeah.
The overt mass response is the same because there's only so much you can do. Because if you're not part of the working mechanism of the system,
right,
you can yell at it,
yeah,
but you can't get into it.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, one of the other things that you talked about, dear, I believe it was last Sunday,
mm-hmm,
and you were talking about how when Detroit was destroyed,
yes,
it was never rebuilt.
Never.
You know, and I think about L.A. There are parts of L.A. where the riots happened. Those communities never saw another thing. I was discussing with my good friend Sharon the other day, and she was saying how the Jewel in Hyde Park, you know, they're building up the whole Bronzeville area. She was saying, you know, they hit the Jewel. They waited 40 years,
yeah,
to have the store there in a primarily affluent African-American area. And in an instant, you know, you're destroying it. You know, there are people that work their whole lives for these businesses, and we allow people to come into our community and get us so angry that we're participating in our own destruction, our own demise, our own progress. That has got to stop. And I was sharing with my husband. I said, you know, if I had kids, you know, I know they'd be in the street because, you know, they'd be in the street. If I had biological kids, they'd be like, okay, let's go do it. But what I also know is I'd probably tell them to get off the street in the evening because what's going on now we've never seen before, and the temperature is a little different, and there are people that have infiltrated the movement under the guise of being for the movement. And the only way to see a spade for what it is and to expose what's going on sometimes is to let all the bad elements roll at night. Y'all want to go break into something, y'all want to go lose something, then y'all do that at night. But in the daytime, we're doing peaceful protests, we're sharing our expressions, and we're doing what we know to be things that are helpful during this movement. I just want to remind those that are on social media, if you're finding this message to be empowering or informational, please feel free to share it with your followers. And honey, is there anything you really want to share anymore to the protest aspect?
No, let's get to the last one so that people can call in and
right,
15 minutes.
We definitely want people to be able to,
yeah,
call in. Let me give a phone number. If we say something that you want to be a part of, the conversation, the phone number is 347-324-5246. You'll press 1 to be entered into the queue if you've got something that you want to share on this last part. So we're going to talk about the peace aspect. Because, you know, you could talk about the problem, you could talk about the protest, but how do we get to the space of peace, or what I call a peace of peace? P-I-E-C-E or P-E-A-C-E. I wrote a book called Beyond Blessed, and at the end of each chapter, because I talked about some traumatic things that really happened to me growing up in the inner city, the gang violence, my situations as well, and when I talk about them, because I'm unpacking such darkness and I'm unpacking things that are in my rearview mirror, but they're in someone else's present mirror because you're reading it, I wanted to leave the readers with an antidote, if you will, a hopeful moment to share with them what I gleaned and what I gained from the chapter. And so at the end of each chapter, there's a section called A Piece of Peace, P-I-E-C-E, or P-E-A-C-E. And so we're going to kind of unpack some of the pieces of peace, if you will, and I'll defer to you because you're smarter.
Yeah, right. If you look at all the situations I talked about earlier, the one thing that was missing or that was actually implemented was a plan. You want to have peace, there has to be a plan. Each of those, 65, 68, even up to right now, there was no plan, a detailed proposal for doing something or achieving something. That's what a plan is. So there's problems, protests, but before you can get to peace, there's plans and practical implementation. Without a plan, there's no progress. If you don't have a real plan, you have no real progress. And that's something that I pray that this generation, which is much wiser, smarter, more educated than my generation was, that they will actually come together as a group somehow. A thousand people can meet at one time just through a Zoom.
Yeah.
And some of those that have answers. I'm not talking about sending me a check. I'm talking about some real answers to address the whole issue. So there has to be a plan. No real plan, no real progress. We wouldn't have salvation if God didn't have a plan, because salvation was the result of a plan.
True.
So to get to peace, there has to be a plan.
I want to read a question that someone asked you. Bill Russell asked the question, Pastor, what is the difference between a natural response and a reasoned response? That's a good question.
If you had an hour and a half, I would actually do that. But let me just give the short answer. The short answer is this. A natural response is it's a knee-jerk or a response that happens within your nature.
Mm-hmm.
A reasoned response is what happens cerebrally.
Yes.
When I was getting off the plane, one of the last flights I took, I was getting off an airplane, and there was a lady that was upset that people were walking past her and not letting her out of her aisle as we were getting off the plane. I never saw her. She was a short lady. And I turned to get my bag, and before I turned around, she elbowed me in my chest. And then she stood in the middle of the aisle like, you know, she was some sort, like she was Mike Tyson. Now, my natural response was to knock her out. I mean, because of where she elbowed, it didn't hurt, but it was like, you know, really?
You let didn't really mean he wanted to hit
her. Yeah, but my natural thought is to swing back. But my cerebral thought, my reason response was, no, let her go, because the issue will turn into a mountain if I do this thing besides just look at her and say, okay, go ahead. I just waved her on. So that's a very short answer to a very big question. Let's get to peace. What is peace? Peace is defined as something being free from anxiety, free from distress, to live in serenity, or to have what's called mental calm. What is so interesting in the last 20 years, every time there's an insurrection or a raising of awareness, the young people yell, no justice, no peace. No justice, no peace. In other words, unless this is done the right way, nobody's going to have any peace. So what is peace? Is it serenity? You have to remember that culture determines belief, and belief determines action. And so the reality is that all of this is, we all live in the United States of America, but we come up under different cultures. So this is a huge issue, and it's going to take understanding and also an open mind to get to that peace area. If you want to have peace in your home, you have to learn how to discuss. It's easy to fuss. It's more difficult to discuss. And so that's a totally, because everybody's right.
Yeah.
Everybody's right. But the reality is, how do you have peace in your home?
Right.
And so, unless we want to divorce from each other culturally, which is not going to work in the United States of America. We're the ununited state. And that's played out itself. And I understand being upset. I mean, I was the leader of a very, very large evangelical group at one time. And because of so much that I saw, I had to get away from it for a while because it wasn't genuine. It wasn't at all. But the reality is there has to be those that are willing to sit down, Drew Brees and others. Let me help you understand what this is.
Yes.
Your ancestors weren't the only ones that fought in the war and died. I mean, my ancestors did as well, but they were never privy to the GI Bill. They were, thousands, hundreds of thousands of black men that fought in those wars were not allowed to have the GI Bill when they came home, unlike others.
Yes.
So throwing that in our face. We fought, bled, and died just like everybody else did. So we had to look at this thing in order that we all may have peace.
Yeah. You know, there was a phrase that I heard someone say, if you want peace, work for justice.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a phrase that Pope Paul VI said in the 1970s, which, of course, still rings true today. There's also the reality that there's got to be something internal that calms your feet.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know what will calm your insides because stuff is always happening. Things are always going to be in turmoil or there's always going to be a new problem or there'll always be somebody in office you don't care for or
right.
you didn't elect or there's always going to be a problem with people
right.
because we're human and that's what happens. But you've got to know where that center comes from, and you've got to know how to activate it no matter what's going on around you. No matter who you're around, who you're in front of, you got to know how to be able to do that. And let's go ahead now that we're, this radio show is an hour, but it feels like 10 minutes sometimes because there's so much that we could just extrapolate. We could just squeeze all the juice out of these grapes. But let's talk a little bit about how we get to this place called peace,
mm-hmm.
especially as it relates to our current modern-day situation. Let me check and see if we have any callers. Let me mention the number again. The phone number is 347-324-5246. Press 1, and you'll be entered into the queue, and then we'll call out the last four digits to welcome you to the conversation. But let's talk a little bit about that. You know, we've been hearing more people, and he and I have been talking about it. A lot of our friends, non-black friends,
mm-hmm.
have been calling and saying that sorry or, you know, not that there's – it's bigger than the word sorry. So they're not just saying, oh, I'm sorry. It's not that. It's that they understand the weight and the gravity
right.
and the breadth of what we've
right.
been experiencing as a people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And as a courtesy – they've been reaching out and extending themselves to us,
right.
not to patronize us
right.
or diminish the weight of the moment, but to let us know not only do they stand with us, but I want you to see a word, to let you know I'm here or hear me say it, because these are people also who it didn't take a movement like this
right.
to have these conversations.
Right.
We've got a friend, a good dear friend.
Max Franklin.
Max
my dad.
Franklin is one of our dear friends. Photographer for our wedding. This gentleman, long before all of this happened,
yeah.
we would have conversations. We've had a many conversations where he's just in tears
yeah.
because he sees through corrective lenses, not rose-colored glasses,
yeah.
what we've been experiencing. Yeah.
And he doesn't use this phrase, which is offensive to me. I'm colorblind. Max never
says
that.
He never says it.
Yeah.
You know, which I told people, no, I don't want you to be colorblind. I said that in the show I think
right.
last week. I said, I need you to see color
right.
because it is only in your seeing of color that you see that the color of my skin is treated differently than the color of your skin.
Right.
And I know people mean, you know, well, when they say I'm colorblind, I don't see what they're trying to say is I don't see the difference between you and me, but that's not
right.
what I want
right.
you to
right.
see. I need you to see with 20/20 vision, X-ray vision if you can. I need you to see what happens when we both walk into a store and we go separate ways. You keep an eye on me and watch how the store owners will keep an eye on me too. You need to see when I am with you at a restaurant how when I'm with you, the waiter may not even have a conversation with me, and I should be the one paying for your meal. I need you to see, when we're at the airport, how I'm attended to versus how you're attended to, or at the doctor's office, or in the grocery store, or wherever I may happen to be, how I am treated versus how you are treated.
There are 4 million answers to this question. But like I said with Max the other night, I appreciate that we have a genuine relationship.
Yes.
That's really what it comes down
yes.
to. You're going to treat me any special than I treat you. We're not going to see things eye to eye, but the reality is that we have this genuine relationship. Someone asked a question up there. I heard a young person ask a question, and it fits into the question you just asked a few minutes ago, how do you find peace? It's understanding that we can all win. They asked a question, if everyone wins, who loses? This spirit has so many believing that if you and I do well, I'm taken away from you. Or someone comes from a different country and they do well, they're taken away from you. The reality is, what if everybody wins?
Yeah.
No one loses then.
Yeah, you have this phrase that you would say, if nobody cares who gets the credit. What
yeah.
is it?
Much can be accomplished if nobody cares who gets the credit.
Y'all see how I listen to this man right here? That's why I'm marrying him. Right there. That's not all the reason, but that's him.
That helps, yeah.
I love the fact that he is a man. You know, I remember when we were courting. I'm going to take y'all on a little journey. I'm going to take a little detour on this three-way intersection.
You got 8 minutes.
I know. We were courting, and he was very careful with his word because he would say to me, if I promise you something, I will do it. If I promise you something, I will do it. But there was a time that he said, hey, I want you to vision cast for me. And I'm going someplace with this because it's a part of where the peace came in our relationship. He wanted to know what I had my heart set to do. He said, I want you to share that with me. And he didn't want me to share it in the moment. He wanted me to take some thought and some time, pray about it, and then share it with him. So the day came where I was to share, you know, what my vision was, where I wanted to go, what I wanted to do. This man said, okay, it was the day. He set a chair in front of me with a notebook. Do you remember that?
Mm.
With a notebook and his iPad, and he took copious notes. And when I'd say what I wanted and what I wanted to do and how I planned to do it, he inquired, okay, so how do you plan to get to that? Okay, so how does that tie into this? Okay, he wanted to know all of it. What it did is it afforded me a peace. But this man wasn't just concerned about Mara, the actress or the speaker, or any of that stuff, or Mara and physical whatever. He was concerned about the dreams, the ideas, and the vision God has given me, what God has called me to do, what was the passion behind where I wanted to go. And I say that because that's the same thing that needs to apply in this situation. How do we get to peace? You have to have a plan. You have to execute the plan. You have to implement, and you have to know how many pieces of the plan you'll personally be able to do, and how many pieces of the plan are going to just take time. Like the new Minnesota, the guy, the African-American guy who just moved to charge from third district
attorney,
district attorney, he said, this is not a sprint, folks. Just because the four of them are here, do not expect that now that we've done this quickly, but normally, people losing their job doesn't happen quickly. Police officers losing their job doesn't happen quickly, let alone all of them getting arrested. Not only does it not happen quickly, it never happens. One cop was arrested. The precedence was a black cop was arrested for shooting a white woman. And I don't even remember what year that was.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the precedent. So he was trying to manage expectations.
Right.
Manage expectations. But we get to peace. Go ahead.
Yeah,
I'll let
yeah,
you share
yeah, yeah.
on this piece.
Part of peace is understanding when you're dealing with something this large, it's going to get political.
Yeah.
And everybody's not political. That's why it's important to have the right people in office when it comes to this. This is a election year. In a few months, not only will we be voting for the President of the United States, but people statewide, countywide, citywide, communitywide. And you want to make sure in wherever you live that there are learned people or those that have the ability to learn, to have your best at heart to get in office. Some people need to go. They've been there too long, and they're just comfortable. They don't want – you got to determine who that is in your community. But the reality is that in order for you to get to this whole idea of peace and having these things implemented, there's the problem, the protest, the plan, the politics, the implementation, and then the peace. Now, I know that might sound boring. It might be a long train, but every train needs a caboose to be fulfilled. And it, just the emotion, it'll last another 2 or 3 years until something else happens. Yeah. There's ways to do this, but you got to stay focused and make sure you do this the correct way.
Yeah. We're almost out of time.
Yes, we are.
We've got about 3 or 4 more minutes.
Time for dinner.
Yeah, I got to feed my husband. He's like, time for dinner. I said, they ain't going to feed you. He said, let's do it after the show. I said, you got it. So, again, the phone number is 347-324-5246. Press 1 to be entered into the queue. We may not have time to take the call, but if a call comes in, we'll try to take it. And I'll share a little bit. If there are some people that wanted to ask a question online via Facebook Live, please feel free to type your question or your comment at this time. I can go ahead and read some before we go ahead and close the show out. There's so much to this topic, as you can tell. But the intersection means that you've arrived someplace new and that there's lots of different areas that or streets or doors, if you would. Back in the day, there used to be some TV show, door number one, door number two, door number three. There are so many different corridors to this, and we were just trying to unpack 3 of them so that we can begin to further the conversation and to allow you all to also think about what is it that you want? What is it that you'd like to have happen? Yeah, we want justice because we know justice will afford us that peace. But what does that look like? What does that look like to you? What does that mean you're going to do actively, personally? What are you going to do? Not just voting in the election in November for the President of the United States, but what are you going to do to ensure those other positions, those positions that matter even more than, in most cases, the presidency? What are you planning to do? Are you going to get involved? Are you going to make sure that you donate some and dedicate some time to someone's campaign or some funds to some things? There are things that you can do, and we all need to do our part in order to ensure that the parts are being done, right?
Yeah. Can I leave a scripture with everybody?
No.
Deuteronomy 31:6, be strong and of good courage. Same thing God said to Joshua, do not fear nor be afraid. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave you nor forsake you. The word forsake means to leave you in a time of trouble. And so understand God is with you. You may be struggling with an illness. You may be struggling with this economy. Maybe you lost a job or you're on a furlough. But I know the Lord will make a way. And you have good friends and good church members that believe in you and pray with you. But I know God is there with you.
Amen. Yeah. Thank you for that scripture. See, I had a pastor bring the scripture because you know our heathen is not there's a couple of comments that I do want to read. Mariette, who's a former officer as well, her and her husband, you went to her retirement party.
Yes.
She said, unfortunately, 45's agenda has nothing to do with promoting peace, hope, or civility. His agenda boils down to how he can enrich his life and those of his family members. He does not care to see beyond himself. Another person says, addressing what is going on at work where white people are uncomfortable and want you to be quiet. That's an interesting reality.
I wish we had
time to unpack that.
Yeah.
Because some people want the protest to go away because they want you to shut up. And they're uncomfortable, but I need you to sit with your uncomfortableness because it isn't. It was just like, oh, okay. Okay, I staged some events and where I would speak, and at the end of the event, because I had been gang raped and went through some traumas in my life, I ended up asking the audience to stand if they've ever experienced rape, molestation, abuse, abandonment, dysfunction, somebody cheating on them. Anyway, people would stand, and at the end of it, no one would be left sitting. And if one person was left sitting, or if a person was crying, I'd have the men who were circled around us go over and speak to the pain. And for some of the people, they didn't want to hear a word. I said, you just listen to them cry because these are wounds that are so deep. Your words cannot heal or mend or fix the situation, which would then cause the men to cry. But I say that because that's what's going on. People have to get uncomfortable with this because it is uncomfortable for us. It is uncomfortable to be in black skin and know that you'll be persecuted for no apparent reason other than the fact that your skin is black. And I will finish this conversation another time because because our time is about up. I want to thank you for joining us here at OMG, the Omar Yale Radio Show. You can catch us via podcast and or on up2meradio.com every Thursday at 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern, and 4 o'clock Pacific Standard Time. You can follow me on social media at Mara Gale, and my website is maragale.com, and I would be remiss if I didn't take a moment of this end-of-life oxygen and thank this man who which is the body in which my rib bone belongs to, Pastor Gerald January, husband divine. Thank you so much.
It was my honor. It was fun to be in your pulpit.
This is my pulpit. All right, folks, we're going to dialogue here, but Facebook, stay there. We're going to have a little mini conversation with you. Stay right there.
Wait to give you the answers to the questions you've been wanting. Everyone likes to be heard and then listened to. So we want you to set your dial to OMG on Thursday at 7 o'clock p.m.